The Web's Michael Smith. It's episode 107 of the Canes Cast. And you know what?
What's that?
With the start of this season, this should be a thrill. There's another meaning to that because we're going to bring back our good friend and several time contributor to this podcast, Shane Willis, who is the director of youth hockey for the Carolina Hurricanes, the best pregame show co-host in the National Hockey League. And he's going to be making a road trip with us this week. It's always exciting when Shane gets to go on the road. Shane, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. Busy week for you.
Well, I'm happy to be back. Yeah, looking forward to a little roadie. Everyone enjoys a good roadie as they're traveling. Looking forward to travel down to Florida with you boys and get ready for another huge Hurricanes win.
Wait, you're coming to Florida?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, welcome, Shane.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah.
So, depending on when you're hearing this, Shane's already in Florida with us.
That's true.
Yeah.
This will probably drop on Monday afternoon, Monday, October 7th,
Ooh.
As it is. The Hurricanes are 3-0.
Yes.
And O, if you want to tack on that extra zero there. Big start for the Hurricane. I know we talked about on the podcast last week, we'd have three games to talk about. We'd hope they'd be 3-0, and sure enough, the Hurricanes are 3-0.
A few other things for the show coming up. No Marty Minute this edition because there was no practice today. It's an off day, a travel day for the Carolina Hurricanes. So we will try to catch up with Jordan Martinook next week and have the triumphant return of the Marty Minute. Just a programming note for everybody that's out there.
Yeah, there was practice scheduled for 11 a.m. today, but after playing 3-4 and winning all three, head coach Rod Brind'Amour opting to give the team the day off, which was met with much jubilation, as I'm sure you can attest to, Shane, whenever head coach Paul Maurice would give you guys the day off.
Yeah, it's always exciting after you play so well as the Hurricanes did in those three games. You don't know what's going to happen. You're kind of sitting there and you see on the board 11 a.m. practice, but the coach comes in after, gives you his triumphant speech, and then goes, by the way, take the day off tomorrow.
Excellent news. On the plane.
I was going to say, if you've seen the video that Canes Vision has posted of it, it was a jubilant group in the locker room. But Shane, to another point of that, and we are going to review the first three games of the season, but just talking about Rod Brind'Amour's sense to read the room, to know his players because of what kind of player he was. He knew what he would want in those situations. He seems to push all the right buttons. You know Rod very well. You're friends. How much of that is that's a guy knowing if I was in that situation, I wouldn't want to practice at 11 o'clock the next day because we've got 3-4, 4-6. Give us the day off and let's get ready to play Florida.
Yeah, to me, that's what makes Rod such a great hockey coach. He's played the game for a long time. He knows in the situations what the players are feeling, how their bodies are feeling. And I think he even looked further ahead than just the trip to Florida for a one gamer and back. You come home, then you're playing a back-to-back at home against two divisional rivals before the next week going out to California. So when you look so far ahead, you know you have to take the time to take these days off and let your players rest, not only physically, but mentally. They put so much into these three games, coming from behind in third periods to win these hockey games. That is mentally draining. The emotional side of it and how far down these guys can get drained. It was a great call giving them the day off today. You look for a great start on Tuesday against Florida. I think that's the key for players. Your coach is rewarding you with a day off. You now must be ready to get back on your toes, back to the game plan going into Florida Tuesday night.
Yep. And strength and conditioning coach, Bill Berniston.
This is Bill Berniston coming to you live from the Canes locker room.
He has been on this show several times. He has used this term, the Canes use rest as a weapon. And I know that that's a question really well suited for Bill, but how much does rest, especially early on after training camp drags on, to maybe just get an extra day where you can sleep in till 9:30 in the morning instead of having to be up early and getting ready to come into the rink and practice?
Well, I think that's the key. These guys are in such great physical condition, but you know, something I mentioned a little bit earlier was the mental side of things. I think you get so ramped up, especially for opening night at home. You do a quick trip to D.C. to play, then back on a back-to-back. To me, the mental side of it where you can just rest and not think about anything today besides watching probably some Netflix or some of the younger guys doing some gaming to get their minds rolling. I don't know anything about gaming, but I just thought I'd throw it in there. To me, the mental side of the rest and just keeping everything light and positive right now with the day off. Like you said, the reaction when the players get told the day off just keeps that excitement level and the energy they have right now going into Florida 3-0 at the level it needs to be.
And the Hurricanes are a hardworking team. They worked hard through training camp. They worked hard through the preseason, and head coach Rod Brind'Amour sort of expects that of his group. So let's really dive into these first three games, because I think there's some similarities, there's some differences in all three, but you have a team that's had to come back three times. They were down one goal on opening night, two goals in Washington, two goals on Sunday evening against Tampa Bay. Shane, from your perspective, what did you see from this group that allowed them to come back in each of those games? Because they could have easily, I think, lost any of those three games going into the third period, down at least a goal in all three of the games. And you look at their record last year, trailing coming into the third period, and it wasn't good. It was like 3-20-some and 3 or something. And now they're 3-0-0 when trailing after two periods this year. So what is it early about this team that has allowed them to come back in these games?
Well, to me, one of the things that sticks out is experience. The experience that this team went through last year, starting in January, the fight they put in, the battle they had to go through to, first of all, get to the playoffs, and then the run they went on. All of those things that they learned throughout those games, throughout that run in the playoffs, is now put into place. I was talking to somebody on the concourse last night as we went to the third period, and you looked around the rink, even our fans, totally calm.
Mm-hmm.
There's a calmness in that room knowing they have the ability, the talent, the mental push, and determination to come back in any game no matter what the score is. Now, you're not going to want to keep doing that for 82 games,
right?
Because as we know, teams start tightening up defensively as it gets later in the season. But right now, I think this team is relying on that experience, knowing they can win these hockey games. And then, to me, one of the biggest aspects of these first three games has been the power play. Something that was sorely missed last season has been on point with the puck movement. Dougie Hamilton at the top and Eric Halla capitalizing around the net. To me, the power play has been a huge part of the success in the first three games.
Yeah, that's when the Hurricanes have needed the power play to provide a spark, whether it's in Washington or here at home against Tampa Bay on Sunday. That's really been what's provided that spark for the Hurricanes. And the Hurricanes knew when they acquired Eric Halla from Vegas that he had the ability to help improve the team's power play. He had 29 power play points a couple seasons ago. What have you seen from him early on that's allowed him to be successful, especially setting up camp sort of at the top of the crease there and finding those loose pucks?
When you first look at Eric Halla, you'd think, well, he's not that big in stature. He's probably going to be one of those outside quarterback-style guys. But you saw it in all three games. He's been right around the net. He's one of those smaller, quick, sneaky forwards that knows the places to go to. And one of the things you can't teach offensive players is how to score. And he knows the places to go. He knows where the pucks are going to bounce on rebounds. He knows and has the hunger to find those loose pucks and bang them in. And you talk about his size, he's not afraid to get in there. These defensemen are working him. He gets behind the net, he leaves them for a minute, and then he just creeps back in at the right times, getting to those areas.
Shane, as a guy, you played on the power play. Everybody always talks about getting guys in front of the net. But to that end, a guy like Eric Halla, or even before him, Ray Whitney, knowing where to go to the spaces, kind of like a rebounder in basketball, to where I know if the puck gets through, it's coming here. How valuable are those guys, and where do you learn that? Is that just from playing in repetition, or is that something you have in there? You can sense where the play is going to go and develop from there.
That's the word I was going to use right there. It's just that hockey sense and the offensive mind of a player, knowing guys who are shooting the puck, where they're shooting it and where it's going to go, if it hits the goaltender and how to jump there. Also having quick hands. He can be laterally going either side of the net looking for those rebounds. But again, the determination and hunger I think Eric Halla has right now, coming off a tough injury last year, missing so many games, is also helping him.
Yeah.
Having that hunger around that, wanting to be a part of this team and be a huge contributor and getting back to 29 goals or more for this team will be huge, not only for him, but this place as a franchise as well.
Well, let me just jump in right there. He's on an 82-goal pace, Shane.
Yeah, it's a good pace right now.
Let's not limit that ceiling, shall we?
As an offensive forward, when you get out to a start like this, it makes the game easier. Getting 3-3, going to Florida, confidence is on your side. As I said, the power play is rolling right now, making it look easy. Compared to last year where it looked so difficult to even get in the zone on entries, then set it up, looking at each other wondering, what should we do? Where are you going? It is tic-tac-toe puck movement right now from the top. Dougie Hamilton, Svechnikov, Teuvo Teravainen down to the net. Yeah. I mean, everything is clicking at pace right now.
Dougie Hamilton was impaired by a finger injury early in last season and really hit his stride from January on, really when the Hurricanes began to hit their stride last season. He's been one of the best players for the Hurricanes early on in this season. What about him makes him so effective from the blue line, both from a defensive standpoint and then also, obviously, his offensive abilities?
Well, I think defensively, he's really worked on his game. Playing alongside a guy in Jacob Slavin allows him a little bit more freedom offensively. But to me, in these first three games, he's been as strong defensively as Jacob Slavin has been. His stick has been more active. He's played more physical. Positionally, he's in the right spots to defend guys coming at him with speed. He did a great job in D.C., yeah, slowing down Alex Ovechkin, who he struggled with last year in the playoffs. So I think those things that he's worked on has helped him immensely defensively, which opens up his offensive side of the puck. I can tell you as a winger, defending a defenseman like Dougie Hamilton is extremely hard because you never know where he's going to go, and he has the green light to go wherever he wants. He's all the way behind the net offensively. He's in on the forecheck, on the power play, on the air call goal in game one. He drives down the boards, gives a little give and go in the corner. So he's very tough to defend because he has such a gifted offensive mind that likes to explore the offensive zone and go wherever he wants. And Dean Chenault has done a great job, I think, working with him, also showing him video of when's the time to go, Dougie, and when is it not time to go. And I think he's put all those pieces in place to play three very strong 60-minute hockey games.
And how about the piece being in place here that he fits, that he's comfortable? I mean, I don't think that we can undersell that Dougie Hamilton, I think, has found a home here in Carolina, that the way things have broke for him. And we know the stories from some of the lunacy up in Boston. And then, you know, you go to Calgary. And, Shane, you know, you're a good Western Canadian lad, that you can't really walk down the street if you're playing for the Calgary Flames and every move that you make is going to be scrutinized. And he comes here to Carolina, and this just seems to be, for him being a puzzle piece, this was the puzzle that he fits into. At least that's what I've noticed for him, and maybe that's why everything has really fallen into place for him.
Yeah, I think he's really found a home here. He seems comfortable. He's got some close friends in the locker room that he spends some time with. He spends a lot of time at the rink, I think, working on his craft. And I think what you've seen is him just really settle in. And once the Hurricanes hit their stride last season and he was able to hit his stride last season, I think his game completely changed, took a 180 from what it was earlier in the season, and he's just carried that momentum into this season. I think his personality and his style of play fits this team really well.
And back to the other side, and Shane, you brought it up. You know, he's known as the offensive guy, and that's his flair, and people will say, well, the defense you can take or leave it. But do you think that because he knows his role so well, the defensive side of the game, it's never going to say easier, but he has fit in and understands how to play it better in this system now after having a year?
Well, and I think he understands, but I think he has worked extremely hard at it, watching the video and working on his positional game so much more. I think playing alongside Jacob Slavin helps him because Jacob is so strong defensively. But another part of it, a difficult situation for the organization was trading Justin Falk.
Yep.
So moving Justin Falk only helps a guy like Dougie Hamilton. I can tell you as a player, when you're always the guy getting called upon and tapped, you're the first guy in the power play, you're the first guy to go out 5-on-5 to start games, that makes you feel good. That makes you want to play. And Dougie Hamilton is that guy right now. He has all the doors have been open to him being, hey, you're the number one guy, go out there and get it done. And he has relished in that situation, and I think it has helped his game as well.
Oh, and the other side too, you know, hockey, we get so caught up in the, this is the first line, this is the second line, this is the first power play unit. Rod Brindamore said it last night, or I should say Sunday, depending on when you're listening to the Canes cast, and thank you for listening to the one-time number one hockey podcast in Finland.
It was a good run.
It was a great run while we were there. But he says he wants both power play units to be a number one unit. You don't want to say that there's a drop-off, and when one is going hotter than the other, it's easier to tap that unit and keep it going. But on the same side, when you know that it's not a one or two, it's if we're hot, we're going to get going. Is that a good thing, Shane? Or do you want to know, now we're going to be tapped as when the power play starts and the other guys get the second minute of the power play?
Well, as a player, I think you want to be the guy getting tapped every single time. I think you have that confidence to go out there. And right now that unit is getting it done. But I think as a coaching staff, an organization, and as players, you want that competition. When they practice the power play, sometimes you'll have one unit at one end of the ice and the other unit at the other end. Yep. And they're given one puck to whip it around to try and score, and the penalty killers are trying to get it down to the other end. Once they shoot it down, then the other unit gets to go on their end. So it's a good, friendly competition to see if they can get things going. But as Rod Brindamore stated, he wants to be able to just tap whoever and go out there and roll over teams. You want to have a 1-2 punch because, as we know, penalties are going to happen on your side. Guys are going to have injuries. You need to have versatile pieces to fit in there that the power play doesn't look any different. Both of them need to look the exact same with different assets out there on the ice. I think that's what he's going to push to drive for. But right now, it's nice to have one that's as hot as the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, and what's been, I mean, they're a number of encouraging signs from a 3-0 start, obviously, but they've gone against, three really elite goaltenders when you talk about Carey Price, Braden Holtby, and Curtis McElhinney, who without his performance last year, the Hurricanes probably don't make the playoffs. They probably don't have the run in the second half that they did. And the Hurricanes, even despite being down a goal or multiple goals, have been able to find ways to beat these goaltenders. And I think that speaks a lot to the offensive talent that they've added. Eric Halla, obviously, a big piece of that. Martin Natchez coming through in that opening game on the power play. And getting offensive contributions from the blue line, too. Is that something that's encouraging to see this early in the season, the fact that the Hurricanes are finding ways to find the back of the net, especially when last season sometimes that was not always the case?
Yeah, there's no question. I think whenever you add as many pieces as the Hurricanes did going into the season is, are we going to be able to put the puck in the back of the net? We've added depth. Mm-hmm. We've added depth on the blue line, but I think you're looking for that consistency night in and night out. And when you have the depth the Hurricanes have, I mentioned it last night on the show on Sunday, that the Hurricanes arguably, including Hayden Fleury, who's been playing some minutes for the Hurricanes, Trevor Van Riemsdyk is very close to coming back, has one of the deepest six defensive cores in the National Hockey League. If you went up and down rosters, these six could be the top three on any team in the league. So you have those six guys, but adding the speed in the offense up front, coming down the stretch last year and playing Boston, to me, that was one of the biggest issues. We couldn't score enough goals. We didn't create enough offense to get those chances. And when you add the speed and the skill of a Ryan Dzingo and Eric Halla and a Martin Natchez up front, it just turns an offense that was good into a great offense. And now that they're rolling, remember, Sebastian Aho hasn't got rolling yet either.
Yeah.
Once he gets rolling with his line mates and finds a good connection of a pair that he is working with, I mean, the sky's the limit right now with when you look at this team.
It's going to be dangerous. Looking back at that game in Washington, I think we all expected it to be emotional, expected some fireworks. I think there was a grand total of maybe one post-whistle dust-up, and it was with Nino Niederreiter and Garnet Hathaway, who has stirred up some stuff.
That's his role. Yeah, that's what he does.
Score some goals, too. Were you surprised?
Yeah, I was. I went into that game going, okay, there was a build-up, and maybe I'm old. Maybe there's that. But I was expecting, and Shane backed me on this one, a little Colorado Avalanche, Detroit Red Wings from the 90s. A little carryover from playoff. There was some bad feelings. You had Kevin from The Office, Todd Reardon, the head coach of the Washington Capitals, chirping.
The Undertaker.
Chirping, yeah. Good one from our color analyst, I believe, Waldorf. That would be Thank Trip you. Tracy on your Canes broadcast on Fox Sports Carolina. It's a cheap plug for us, which, by the way, you can watch Hurricanes Live, Emmy-nominated pregame show.
Thank you. We were.
At the same time, Shane, I was expecting all of that, especially when the coach starts chirping Rod Brindamore. But, Rod wasn't buying into it, and I think his message to the team was, don't do anything stupid. Don't react to them doing anything to try to get you out of the game. And I also think that Rod Brindamore did a great job managing his bench to not let a situation escalate, meaning – I'm not going to put a guy out there against somebody else. If they want him, Todd Reardon had to go make a change and put somebody out on the ice against him. We're talking about Warren Fogle because there was a lot of talk about Warren Fogle's hit on TJ Oshie, and the Caps were the ones that were chirping the most. But it wasn't like the Caps were all choir boys in that playoff series either. But I was a little surprised. But then as the game wore on and it was a hockey game that was there to be won, the Caps weren't going to do anything dumb to take a penalty. And the Canes weren't going to react to if the Caps were going to do something dumb because there were 2 points that were left on the table. I thought it was going to be early fireworks, and as we went through the first period and nothing was there, it kind of settled in like, nah, it's just a hockey game. And, Shane, you've been involved in games where you know, circle it in red on the calendar. Here we go.
Yes, let's dust it up. Here
comes the chairs off of the top rope.
I agree that I was very surprised. I agree with you, and Rod Brind'Amour did an outstanding job in preparing his team, and that the Hurricanes came out mentally focused at the task of their system of how we're going to play and how we're going to win this hockey game. If I was Todd Reirden, I would have been extremely disappointed in my hockey team. They came out a little flat. The Hurricanes really took it to them, yep. Showed no emotion and no energy, as you talked about, to get fired up and get energized and get your building into it from, if you remember, us walking out of Game 7 yep. waving, goodbye, have a great summer. So if I was Todd Reirden, I would have been extremely disappointed in my locker room. But, you know, from the Hurricanes side, we loved it. Another win in D.C. for us. We'll stay in first place. You guys remain behind us in the rearview mirror. But, hey, I'm sure our Hurricanes locker room, if there's ever a knock on the door, there's 20 guys that are open and say, let's get to it.
And 21, because the head coach would definitely be one of the guys who, as he said, he's 100 feet away.
Well, I know if Todd Reirden's going to be chirping and lipping, I know I'm putting my money on.
Yeah. Vegas won't even put that one on the boards as far as the odds go. But I'm exactly with what Shane just said. And now it's two come-from-behind wins in Washington, D.C., with an overtime win in a place that used to be just a nightmare for the Canes to go and play. And now, you know, they're starting to tilt the ice their way a little bit. And, look, it's three games into the season. Yep. And the Caps are going to be really good. We still have a lot of games to play. But one other thing I take out of that game, how good was James Reimer standing on his head to keep it a 2-0 game? Now, the Canes could have been up early in that one, as Shane pointed out, because, Michael, I think the Canes had three grade-A chances, a couple of breakaways, and Brayden Holtby was really good. Yep. But then at the other end of the rink, when the Canes needed a big save, James Reimer turned in that performance that – everybody wanted to see, were the Canes going to get that 1-2 punch in goaltending? And again, it's early, but that's a heck of a start for James Reimer in a Carolina Hurricanes uniform.
Yeah, it almost felt like that was going to be one of those games where the Hurricanes had chances, they had breakaways, but Brayden Holtby was just going to play like a goaltender who's going to get paid this offseason. That's what it felt like early, at least. But James Reimer, I think, was equal to the task in his own right. He made a couple saves, especially one there in overtime where, you know, Alex Ovechkin, they were trying to isolate him and find that one-timer, and he whiffs, and the puck takes a weird bounce off Joel Edmondson, and Reimer sort of has to scramble back and recover as the puck sort of slides along the goal line. That's a veteran move. That's a huge save, obviously, because then, you know, not too long after that, Jake Gardner skates down the ice and wins the game for the Hurricanes. So James Reimer in his Hurricanes debut, very sharp. He's got pretty good career numbers against the Capitals, too, yeah. After looking at it.
His one-loss record going into the game was 4-4-2.
And had the 9.29 save percentage.
Yeah, his save percentage was almost .930. For those of you who like the analytics, welcome to the analytics portion of the Canes cast. And I think his goals against average was
like 2.4 or something?
Yeah, 2.42, but yeah. It's under that now. And, again, if there's something about this team where, and you know it, Shane, playing the exact same style, we've heard this before. You know, for a backup goalie, the teams play different with the other goalie. Last year, the Canes didn't play different if it was Peter Mrazek, Curtis McElhinney, Alex Nedeljkovic for his one start, even Scott Darling. They didn't play different. It was always the same. And, again, we've seen it through three games. They play the exact same style. Doesn't matter who the guy is behind them. They just have to go make the saves if they're wearing the goalie equipment.
Well, to me, it goes back to the culture. They talked about changing the culture last year. With Justin Williams at the lead, what Rod Brind'Amour demanded and wanted inside that locker room, and it's just continued into this season. You've added five new pieces in that locker room, and some of those guys were free agents. They came here because they wanted to be a part of this culture, and it hasn't changed. And as you said, those guys go out no matter who's in the pipes, who's starting shift, who's starting on the power play, and they go to work and they fight tooth and nail for each other through and through in all three of these games to start the season. And it's a matter of putting as many of those games together as possible. There's going to be bumps in the road. But again, when you turn to your next captain in Jordan Staal, he's that calming force inside the room to go back to work, showed a great pass in overtime Sunday night to Jacob Slavin for a huge win. And I think just the culture to me is so tight inside that locker room already. You can see the smiles. You can see the energy in this group coming together closer and closer each day. And it's going to be exciting now to go on the road and watch these guys interact and how they play in Florida Tuesday night. But, I mean, you guys were there. I missed it going back to Washington. I was able to go in the playoffs last year. Was it quieter in Game 7 when the puck went in or Saturday night?
Oh, Game 7.
Yeah. Game seven. It was almost like when the puck went in, it was almost like a vortex just sucked all the sound out of Capital One Arena. The other night, it was just like, well, whatever. We got a point.
The only building where I've ever been in where it went quieter after a goal was scored was in Boston in 09 when Scotty Walker scores the series-winning goal in overtime, because that building went from full throat, ready to go crazy, to dead silent. I mean, dead silent, where you could hear conversations that the Canes were having on the ice up in the press box. And I think Michael said it best, you know, Caps fans are like, we got a point. And they grumbled where it was, I think, last year, just, wait, what? We're out?
Yeah. I think the Caps fans used to love when the Hurricanes came to town. Now it's just like, how do you like me now, Caps?
Yeah, we had a group of really rowdy Hurricanes fans right below us in the press box. They started a few "Let's go Canes, let's go Hurricanes" chants that really got that section going. Surrounding Capitals fans weren't too happy with it, but the scoreboard in the end reflected.
Whatever. I am so.
Did they show more fire than their team on the ice?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. It's fire.
By the way, there were a bunch of Canes fans who were out waiting for the buses to go by.
Yes.
And we appreciated that. Also, quick shout out. There's a family from Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, you remember.
That drives down as much as they can to watch the Canes play. And just wanted to say hello to that great family. So appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks for listening.
I know. And Brock appreciates that as well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Also, if I can go back to how this team is playing, and Shane, I'm glad you mentioned that, how other teams are taking note that they don't want to play against the Canes. Did you guys see this from Steven Stamkos after the game yesterday?
I did, yeah.
This might be a preview of the quote that we'll have on the broadcast, but Steven Stamkos, captain of the Tampa Bay Lightning, after the Lightning had zero shots on goal in the second period.
Unheard of.
And two shots happened? On goal.
If we check the stats, has that ever happened?
It's to Tampa? Or
to anybody?
Oh, yeah. It's happened.
It's happened, but it's never happened, I think I saw, to the reigning President's Trophy winner the following season.
Yeah, okay. But
and after his goal. So he scored his goal with like 2.5 minutes left in the first period. They only had two shots the rest of the game. And that's like 44 minutes of game time. The Hurricanes had three shots in overtime alone.
Yeah. So here is Steven Stamkos' quote. "It's tough to shoot when they have the puck all game. I mean, we just got totally outclassed by a team that was hungry to play. That had a game plan and a structure the way that the Canes did." There's a dot, an ellipsis in there.
So that, I think, is, I mean, it's obviously a huge testament to what Rod Brind'Amour has instilled in his group. The resiliency, the work ethic. And this is on the second half of back-to-back, too. And I know we might make too much of a deal about back-to-backs and their, you
Rod
know,
Brind'Amour
effect
thinks
on,
we do.
Right, their effect on players. But, I mean, it was important for the Hurricanes to get out to that quick start in the second half of back-to-back with travel.
But
and
Tampa played, too. They played the
right, exactly.
With travel.
And that's why I think the start was important. But both teams kind of negated each other, and then Tampa scored a couple more goals and got a big lead.
Let's go to the source. We got a guy who played in the league right here. Just ask him if it matters.
Well, does it?
No, not really. I mean, the day off today was huge, though. To me, I think when you go into a back-to-back, it's almost like that third day is when you really feel terrible.
Yeah.
But again, it goes back to the testament of how these guys are training and being pushed. Bill Burniston, we talk with him all the time, a tip of the cap to him because of what he does and the knowledge they put into how to properly train and prepare these guys. And that the Hurricanes, as you mentioned, from the end of the first period throughout the rest of the game and through overtime, there was no slowdown in overtime that we go to 3-on-3 against, as you said, the reigning President's Trophy winners with the skill they had to not touch the puck.
Yeah, that's one of the league's most potent offenses.
And you go to 3-on-3 thinking, look out, here they come, Kucherov, Stamkos, Braden Point, all these guys, Victor Hedman, and they can't even touch it.
And the two shots they had early in the third were back-to-back, like a shot and a rebound, and that was it. That was all they had. That was all Peter Mrazek had to do in the last 44 minutes of the game. So he had a pretty easy night.
Well,
which
everyone
is good.
Looks at everyone's like, well, let's talk about the Hurricane structure and this and how they do this. Sure, they have structure, but they work so hard. And if a guy gets out of structure, he's working hard enough. He's like, well, I'm just going to chase the puck then and knock it down. And they are all over teams. Like, you have no time to make a play, get fancy, slow down. If your feet stop moving, the Hurricanes players are all over you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun to watch.
I've got to think it's fun to play, too. As opposed to, you know, you have to be here. You can't be off of this market. It's the if you're going to make a mistake, you got to be there.
Yeah.
Got anything else?
Nope.
I thought you did.
Just nope. Yep.
I was just agreeing.
Agreeing. Full agreeance.
Full agreeance.
That's kind of like when we do the...
If you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
Where you have nothing.
I do have stuff.
Come on. as Will Ferrell has just told us, Shane, you get to play in this game too.
Oh, we're playing a game?
Yeah. If you like it, you can keep it.
Okay.
If not...
Send it right back.
Exactly.
Hard forehand.
So here's one from Danielle Fuzzy Fur on Twitter.
Ooh.
The Canes will set a record for games going to overtime or shootout this season. If you like it, you can take it. If not, send it right back.
I selfishly want to send it back.
Yeah, I do.
I like games that end in regulation.
Yes. Especially, and when I'm up there writing my recap or trying to write my recap, I've had to have, you know, like two versions ready to go for the past three games.
Think about it. You'd have millions, billions of recaps ready to go.
China.
Sure.
I would like it if regulation games.
I don't know what the record is, but I truly hope the Canes don't come near it. What do you think? The way they play, no. They're going to be in every game, though.
Yeah, I'm going to send it back. I think one of the big things to me is the offense has been very good. The power play has been very good. But there's a couple pieces that haven't got going yet.
Yeah.
So the Hurricanes have the ability to score more goals. Now, the only part I'll lean on to say, would it be the Hurricanes or someone else? The parity in the National Hockey League is so close. Every game is close.
Yeah.
You don't ever see a 6-0 hockey game anymore. It is always a 1-2-goal game. You may have a laid egg for a 6-1, 6-2 game, but everything is so close. That's why we see so much overtime, why they change the rules on what's the first tiebreaker and all this stuff now. They're confusing me. I can't even talk about it on television. That's why I have you, Mike.
Thank you.
You just take the lead. Someone will put up a nice graphic that they'll just tell it and we'll read it.
Exactly.
But I'm going to send it back. I say the Hurricanes get even hotter with the offense.
I was told there'd be no math. But yes. Shane's right. And usually when Shane doesn't know, I'm just like, well, the new rule changes confuse everybody because I'm usually confused as well.
Yeah.
He's a great wingman.
Let's keep this one rolling from Matthew Herman. If you like it, keep it. Jacob Slavin will score more than 15 goals this season. I'm going to keep it. I mean, he's got two already.
He's got two. He's never had more than eight.
I think he's gonna get like 16.
I'm gonna keep it too, because
I mean, he just sneaks over the 15 line.
Just he's such a great player. He's so smart and where he makes his reads. And why I'm also gonna take it is you just mentioned he has two goals. The one in DC is like a 50 goal score. He catches it, drops it, and bangs it in past ultimately one of the best goaltenders in the National Hockey League. And then Sunday night in overtime sends a rocket to the perfect spot in the net. It's not like he shot that in the middle of the net. He had to go high right, just under the bar, on a one-timer. He placed it there and ended it. So two elite goals have got Jacob Slavin off and running.
He's already one of the league's best defenders. A Norris Trophy, I think, should be candidate, perhaps winner one day.
Well, remember, the Norris Trophy is based on which defenseman puts up the most points and is playing on a good team.
That's why he's going to have 15 goals this year.
I'll tell you what, if he has 16 goals and 50 points, he'll be in the Norris conversation. He'll be one of the three.
With minimal power play time?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. He's got, and Rod Brind'Amour has
mentioned it. Right now, he's not slated to have any power play time.
He's got that offensive element to his game, and I think you're just starting to see it really come out, and he's having more confidence in it, obviously. Joining the rush when he can, because he's paired with Dougie Hamilton. Yep. So he does, you know, he's not going to be the one to jump into the rush.
It's hard to get ahead of Dougie.
Correct.
But he can, though. That's the thing. And
and
now I think that's where we mentioned Dougie earlier. Dougie can read off of Jacob Slavin. And if Jacob Slavin's going to jump in the play, Dougie Hamilton doesn't mind hanging back in the situation because he knows he'll get his chances. And by the way, can we go back and talk about the goal in Washington? I know Shane just brought it up, but the athletic ability to, he is going full steam, running out of real estate on one of the best goalies in the league, catches the puck, settles it down, and then fires one over Braden Holtby. I mean, that is McDavid-esque. That is what a guy who we expect to score 50 in the league does, and he did it like it was nothing, like it was absolutely nothing. He is just scratching the surface of how good he can be.
Yeah.
But I am going to put another one out there for you guys, and it stays with the defenseman. Brett Pesce will have 10 goals this year on the blue line because if you've noticed, his offensive game has started to flourish. He came close in game one to getting a goal, and then he gets rewarded with the goal on Sunday night against Tampa Bay. And he's putting the puck on net. And what he does, Shane, that I like is when he loads up the rifle from the blue line, he keeps it low and he keeps it on net. So there's always a chance for it to pinball off of somebody.
Oh, man.
I know that's a high number. I mean, that's a high number I'm setting
over 10?
10. I'm setting like he hits double digits. If he goes over, he goes over, but I'm saying 10. You can send that one back, but
again. Yeah, I'm going to send it back. He had 7 last year, which was his career high. I'm going to send it back.
Sorry, I'm going to send it back. And here's if I was coaching Brett Pesce, one of the things when I watch him play and he's winding up to shoot, it's almost like he's always looking for that shot pass. He's so unselfish. He's looking for a stick of his forwards behind instead of just unloading and saying, I'm going to drive this thing top corner like my boy Jacob Slavin did last night in overtime. I think if he went a little unselfish, maybe we could get to 10. But he's always got his head up, which is key for all you young defensemen out there, all my youth hockey players. When he is winding up, he is staring, trying to find a teammate, or where is that net at? Does a great job with his head up. But to me, he's always looking for that shot pass. I mean, he passed one off Justin Williams' face last year. It was unbelievable.
Speaking,
I don't know if the former captain would agree with that.
Speaking of defensemen scoring goals, we made bold predictions on the podcast last week.
Yes, we did.
I tossed out to you that Dougie Hamilton would score a shootout goal.
I took it.
You took it, and then in game one, boom. You tossed out that Brett Pesce would score a shootout goal. I sent it back, so Brett Pesce, you're up.
I know. He's on the clock.
Now, I don't know where he is in the shootout order. I can't imagine he's far up the list.
I don't think that he is in the top 9. But you never know.
We need a really long shootout.
One other thing about Brett Pesce, though. You mentioned Dougie Hamilton's defensive game in D.C. Brett Pesce's defensive game all year long, be it a small sample size, has been knocking on that door of elite. And how he was against Alex Ovechkin Saturday night. And a lot of times it was number 22 on the ice against number 8. And he just did a solid job of marking Ovechkin. And he is playing just a sneaky good brand of defense. He's the third defenseman who gets talked about with the Carolina Hurricanes. And I think he likes it that way. But at the same time, he's been playing at a super high level to start the season.
Well, and I think that's the reason why, in my mind, doesn't bother me if he doesn't score 10 goals because he is such a great shutdown defenseman. He's going to be paired against the top lines each and every night when Dean Chenault and Rod Brindamore can get him out there. He's done a great job physically, continued to mature, bigger, faster, stronger. He has a great active stick. And the other part of being a great defenseman and all the young guys that watch, it's about sacrifice. Brett Pesce is not afraid to get in the corner. He's not afraid to mix it up physically or lay his body on the line to block each and every shot. And I can tell you, playing against Alex Ovechkin, sacrificing your body in front of that thing night in and night out is not an easy task. And Brett Pesce has stepped up and continued to mature as a defenseman. And he's one of the elite defensemen in the National Hockey League as well.
Here's one.
Oh, I was going to say it's not your own.
If you like it, you can take it. If not, send it back. The Hurricanes are going 82-0 and giving away 82 points in the process. All overtime and shootout wins.
I'm not going to lie. Yeah. There's a text string I'm on right now with some names I'm not going to mention that every time there's a win, the text comes through. The perfect season is still intact.
Yep, 82-0. Just like
the road to 82-0 is still clear.
Just like Eric Hall is on pace for 82 goals.
And again,
so be it.
I'm going to buy that.
And Andrei Svechnikov is on pace for, I don't know, 90-some assists or something. I don't know the math, but
why not?
He's got 4-3.
Why not? In all realistic
Probably have to send that one back.
Yeah, probably.
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 I mean, it's somewhere you're going to stub your toe in a shootout.
Yeah.
So, you know, 81-0-1.
I'll take that.
Yeah. So good with that.
Quest for perfect season.
Although, as Tampa's shown, the President's Trophy is not the way to the Stanley Cup.
No, that's very true.
I do think that there is something to, if you get everything wrapped up so quick that you just naturally take your foot off the gas. When you don't have an important game to play the last month of the season, and then all of a sudden you have to.
You go mentally stale.
They didn't, but they still kept winning, which is the interesting part.
Because that's a talented team.
They're just that good.
And that's why I don't care if this was game 3 or 33 or 82, what the Hurricanes did to that Lightning team on Sunday is absolutely impressive. I mean, nobody did that to that team until we got to the playoffs last year, and Barry Trotz and his New York Islanders did Barry Trotz coach teams, which is just suffocate the life out of you. Now, maybe there's a blueprint off of that, maybe, but what they did to a Tampa team that can just come at you wave after wave of talented players, I don't think that's a fluke, and I don't think that we can just sneeze it off. I think that it's impressive and something we got to keep note of, even in game number 3.
Yeah. I mean, Tampa did come in waves a little bit in the first period. The Hurricanes were a little too loose with the puck, and the Lightning made
But I thought
pay.
The Canes had a good first period.
Overall, yes. But it was just that, 10-minute segment where the Lightning were able to score 3 and build that lead. That's how they succeed. That's how they bury teams. But the Hurricanes, to their credit, aren't a team that's going to get buried that easily, and they were able to fight their way back into the game.
When we talk about, you know, getting that next goal, and Rod Brindamore has talked about it all the time, that next goal is so important. Tampa was at 3-1. I think if Tampa was able to get that next goal and make it 4-1, that's the backbreaker. That's where the point that it's even more difficult to come from behind from and fight back into a 3-goal deficit. And that's why games are never over, and we hear coaches and players talk about all the time, we got to put them away. You got to put them away. And when you let teams hang around, as Tampa did last night with the Carolina Hurricanes, they get rolling. Their speed gets up to play. They take a couple penalties because of the pressure and because of the speed, and the Hurricanes capitalize and win the hockey game.
You almost think that Tampa goes into the locker room after the first period going, well, they're playing back-to-backs. They traveled. You know, we just got to play a minimal game and finish this one out because they're probably tired too. That's not what the Canes are about, and you can sense it even last year at the start when the wins weren't coming. They played 60 minutes, and they played it the same way, and that's a good thing. And, you know, we'll continue to see this come down that path. Is there anything else? Do you have one of your own, or does everything just come from?
Well, that was one of my own, 82-0.
Oh, God. That's it?
I'm taking credit for that one.
All right.
That counts. I threw it out there.
All right. That's one. Because we do this every week on the podcast, Shane, as you know, is Shane Willis has now topped Bill Burniston as the most appearances on Canes Cast.
Yes. Yeah. We won't count Jordan Martinook because it's a bit, but
it's a reoccurring
segment
of the show. The
that'll
Martin
return minute. Next week.
Next week.
When there's practice.
But every week we do this. The Ron Burgundy, every week. And he never has one. And he knows it's coming.
It's a bit at this point.
Is it really?
I'm just playing right into
it. Or is it just? Is it just?
No, it's a bit.
Okay.
I got one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Look at this.
Here we go. On tap.
Come on.
Put it on a tee here.
All right. Keep it or send it back. Rod Brindamore is up for the Jack Adams this year. Because he was sorely missed last year.
I'll take it. Yeah.
I'll keep it.
Yep. Absolutely. I think there were so many good coaching performances last season, and I'm sure there will be this season too. But the fact that he wasn't in that group of three last season, I think, was criminally underrated. And I think it'll get rectified this season.
And again, let me be the person for everybody. Every fan base thinks they get slighted when their team, their people aren't up for awards. Let me go back to that as to why. One, it's voted on by the media. That's the broadcasters vote for the coach of the year. And you knew John Cooper was going to be up because of the season that Tampa had. They tied the record for wins in a season.
Right. No matter if he has the best roster and it looked easy, he still coached them.
Correct.
Barry Trotz took over a team that was supposed to be awful and got them to second place in the Metro Division.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was a great coaching job he did. And, of course, they had that split. They had to play at the Barclays, and then they had to go play at Nassau. And you know somebody, the guys out west are going to vote for a coach out west. And Craig Berube steps in, and what he did with the St. Louis Blues, albeit it was three-quarters of a season. I mean, he took them from worst to first.
They were in dead last.
Yeah, on January 1st. So, you know, somebody wasn't going to make it.
Right.
Rod Brindamore will make it this year because somebody asked me how many points do I think the Canes are going to get. They're going to get 101 points. That's what I think. So if they crack 100 points, Rod Brindamore will be in Las Vegas for the NHL awards show.
I just think since Berube made it, I felt like Brindamore was sort of in that same group of he took a team, and he was with the team for the whole season, and took them from almost maybe fourth to last to a playoff team.
The guy who threw off Rod Brindamore being there was Barry Trotz and what he did with the Islanders.
Yeah.
Because that was the one thing that nobody saw that coming from the Islanders. And again, somebody from the West is going to get nominated. Yeah. You take a look for every award, there's only three finalists, and it's usually two from one side and one from the other.
And you could probably have made an argument for Bill Peters, too.
Yeah, you could have.
In Calgary.
Yeah, you really could have.
And they were top team in the West. And
yeah, so. And Berube beat him out for that.
Right.
So.
Well, since they're all keeping it, should we just do the show from Vegas when Rod is there?
Yes.
Yes.
Live.
Yes.
And okay.
I'm keeping that.
We're keeping that one, too.
Taking that one. Just go ahead and schedule it. Get it on the books.
Wait, everybody wants us to do live podcasts. Live podcasts from Vegas.
I'm in.
For the NHL Awards. We've got to clarify that.
Might be our last, but we're in.
That's fine. if that's the way that the Canes cast goes out, Shane, I am co-signing that.
That's the end of the podcast. No more after that.
Oh, that's
break the show budget.
That's fine.
Which is $0.
That's fine. I just wanted to squire you two about town in Las Vegas. Thank you.
I'm in.
All right. So
when in Rome.
Go on.
Quick shout out to Tony Garver. At TG Tony Garver on Twitter, he was the winner of the pair of tickets to opening night last week. He got to enjoy the game with his daughter, good seats, and he got to see a Hurricanes win. So, hey, that's what happens when you listen to CanesCast. You might win some tickets.
I think Brock McGinn speaks for all of us.
Thank you.
Yes, he does.
For the kind words on Twitter.
That drop, I've hammered that drop this show.
As well you should.
It's gotten a workout. Yeah, we might as well throw one of these in too. Thanks to Phil DiGiuseppe for that one. Oh. He's gone but not forgotten.
Well, it was birthday, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's true.
I already covered that.
Did you guys went to a sorry, Billy B.
Oh,
see you later.
Wait a minute. This is where we say goodbye to Bill Berniston because we're going to talk about food. Yeah. And now we're going to get an angry tweet about staying in our lane.
You guys went to Jolie.
Yes, we did.
Did I say that properly?
Yes, you did.
Jolie.
Which is French for pretty or beautiful.
Oh.
Now, you know, it's
what did you have?
I had, believe it or not, a chicken dish. It was called chicken fricassee. How it was? Unbelievably good. My wife. Oh, excuse me. Thank you, Phil. My wife. You just show a little restraint, will you?
All I have to do is press this button.
Yeah, I understand
so easy.
That.
Here we go.
Oh, man. This is going to be the
speaking it's gonna of
the
be
end
a blast.
Of the Canes cast. It was really good. She had a steak dish that was amazing. Scott Crawford from Crawford & Sons is the man behind it. On Person Street. It is outstanding. And it's a French bistro. You, sir, who lived off continent in Switzerland, were you, was it Swiss French or Swiss German?
We were Swiss German.
Oh, okay. So yes. You got a lot of people just going, nine! And all of that. So in this
Schnell,
case.
Schnell! That's all the coach yelled at me.
What does that
it's
mean?
Quick.
Quick.
Oh.
Fast. Okay.
Exactly. Mach Schnell. Very fast. Haven't you ever watched a World War II movie?
Yeah, but I don't remember that word.
Okay, well, now you do. It's going to be etched in your brain.
It wasn't in Inglourious Bastards, I don't think.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Oh, was it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Gourlami. It was in a, it's a French bistro, so it's like that. So you don't have to be super dressed up either to go to it.
Do we have any recommendations for Sunrise? The answer is no.
No. No. We do have a recommendation for Washington, D.C.
Well, I was going to say we have recommendations for Fort Lauderdale, which is 25 or so minutes from Sunrise.
Yes, we do. But
we're going to Sunrise.
Yes.
There's a
the cookies at the Doubletree is my recommendation. Right.
Is that dinner?
Yes. It, yeah. Breakfast and lunch
and
also.
And lunch, yes. And, you know, grab a banana. Try to make it healthy.
Yeah.
So, but DC, do you want to give the recommendation for where people should go?
District Taco is really good for lunch.
And for dinner, where we went?
Surfside. Both taco places, both Mexican food. That's really all that I eat.
Michael Smith really branches out on the
road.
I'm
just 100% tacos.
But I will say the queso at Surfside, tremendous.
Really good.
Tremendous. Shane, evidently you and Tripp have places to go in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
I was with you. I'm very, very hurt.
Tripp, no shout out to Mike. You're a huge part of the night.
I know. I'm very hurt and offended. Hurt that I was not brought up for that night.
There is no question. I left you in the battle to fight.
Exactly. Yes, you did. As Shane Willis gave us the Irish goodbye. I didn't know you had that in you.
Yeah. Comes out every now and then. I like to keep it safe.
All of a sudden I look and Shane's waving as he's walking out the door. And I realize that my evening is still continuing with our good friend, Tripp Tracy. We went back to the hotel 5 minutes after you left.
Yes, of course.
That's how all of those evenings end.
Yep.
In bed by 10:30.
Yes.
That's what I was. I called. Wished her a good night, and we had a playoff game to get ready for.
Perfect.
Are you happy?
Yes.
Okay,
I got to press it.
Press the button.
That button's wore out.
Oh, my God. It's
going to get a serious workout here.
We're gonna have to talk about who controls us and who doesn't. Speaking of what the Hurricanes do for the community besides letting us have a bunch of fun on this podcast, we talk about it. Shane Willis is the director of youth hockey for the Carolina Hurricanes. Sunday was youth hockey day for all of the fans to come in who play around here. We've seen so many great stories about it, but Shane, what else is going on with the program? Because I had a friend whose son participated in the first goal program, and he loved every second of it. And it just keeps seemingly growing more and more, bigger and bigger every year. That's got to make you feel a huge sense of pride of how this community is really starting to come to hockey as a sport that the youth are going to be a part of.
Yeah, I'm very proud of and obviously blessed to be in a position to kind of receive all the feedback from parents who partake in the first goal program or are playing for the Junior Hurricanes program or maybe playing in Charlotte for the Junior Checkers or in Greensboro. So many different areas. The game continues to grow and thrive here in what everyone considers a southern market that's not a hockey market. It's been outstanding to watch. So many great stories from the programs. I think one of the biggest stories I've heard this year multiple times of parents who were in the first goal program. These are kids ages 5 to 9, and I've received emails, I've received phone calls of parents saying, my son was so shy, he was so scared, he was having trouble at school making friends. And since he started this program, which is only a 7-week program, it has totally changed his life. The way he talks about it at dinner, the way he is outgoing more at school, and the way the game continues to change boys and girls throughout the state has just been amazing to watch. And we always talk about the National Hockey League and scoring goals and how many wins we can get. But there's so many stories that I'm able to see behind the scenes in the youth hockey world that are simply amazing. And the NHL is doing such a great job about putting them at the forefront. We have a great video of young Kian from the first goal program on our feed right now at hurricanes.com. We mic'd him up during one of the sessions. An outstanding voice. He's going to be a commentator one day, I think, because he talked nonstop for an hour on the ice. But, I mean, again, people going to work each and every day. I love doing what I do. Coming in here, being on a podcast, doing TV with you guys.
How cool is it to have someone who invented hockey going through your first goal program? For those who have not seen the video.
He doesn't watch a lot of hockey, yes, but he invented hockey.
Yes, those questions I was asking him were simply hilarious when I asked him about Jacob Slavener. I don't know. I don't watch hockey.
I don't watch a lot of hockey.
At the end, he invented hockey.
Yes, he did. And why are the hockey pieces of equipment you're using, not using pucks, but you're using a ball, a little bit easier for the kids to handle? Why is it so clean?
Yes, we like to keep them clean just so they get excited for it. If you mess those things up, they're not going to use that ball, so we like to keep those things clean out there.
There's an important lesson in that.
an amazing time. And then when you roll into the older kids, the junior Hurricanes at the higher levels, starting to see more and more players getting those Division I scholarships. A lot of players right now, a few of them that have graduated playing in the East Coast League for different National Hockey League teams, guys getting the opportunity to play in the American Hockey League. You know, I know Rod Brindamore is extremely proud of his son, Skyler, now at Quinnipiac, starting the season up there to play. And, you know, we're always sitting here hoping, and in the back of my mind, and with Emil Hartman, who helps me each and every day, that one day we're at the NHL draft and the first overall pick is a kid from North Carolina, whether it be Raleigh, whether it be Charlotte. But so many talented players coming up through the system here, continuing to work hard. And I think the big thing to me is that we've been able to set a structure in place with our coaches here and developing coaches to use USA Hockey and the ADM model that is so successful, seeing seven of the top 12 picks last year in the National Hockey League draft be Americans. It's come so far because of what they've done and the programs they put in place and the structure they have for youth programs to follow along with.
Well, and the pride of a guy like Josh Wilkins, I know it was a preseason game, but here's a Raleigh native who gets called up by the Preds to play here in Raleigh. And look, if Austin Matthews, who grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, can be the number one pick in the NHL draft, you know, why not somebody from the state of North Carolina?
Well, and I tell you, we always sit there and say, oh, the number one pick, that would be awesome. But I tell you what, someone could get picked in the ninth round, I don't care. But a kid coming from Raleigh who works as hard and trains as hard and puts everything he has into it to stepping out on the ice for a National Hockey League team in his first game and then scoring his first ever goal, that's what we're looking for in years to come.
They don't even have a ninth round anymore, and it would still be awesome.
Yep. Just seven rounds. Just seven now.
Good thing I'm not in it. I'd probably be a 10th rounder.
You got drafted twice.
I liked it.
They
fun.
Did have nine rounds.
I think it wasn't fun. The draft is horrible.
They did have nine rounds back then.
You should go buy tickets. Go to the draft. It's fun.
Yeah. As a player waiting exciting. To hear your name, it becomes excruciating. But I'm
just because you keep comparing to guys who are getting picked in front of you.
But I know. But
it's like the old, you know, gym classes when they're picking dodgeball teams or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're like, what, really? That guy?
Well, it's funny how things change as the dynamic of sports. But back to Shane's point, my buddy, whose kid went through the first school program, my friend was always concerned. He's like, he doesn't like baseball. I don't think he likes football. He's really not that into basketball. And he found hockey, and all he does is talk about hockey now and, you know, what his favorite team is, which is now the Carolina Hurricanes. You guys are all welcome for me having another fan for the team.
Growing the game.
Well, that's what it's about, growing fans too, right? Yeah. Some of these kids may not play past 16 because, as we all know, you start smelling gasoline and perfume and you stop playing sports.
Yep.
but the other part of the game, we had a great event here Saturday that involved all girls.
Yeah.
We had 150 girls in the first goal program this year.
That's awesome.
We have full junior Hurricanes travel girls teams that are competing and really destroying teams up through the D.C. area. They're playing so well. And then last night at the game, we talk about things we get paid in. And I got a text this morning. He goes, we don't get paid in dollars. We get paid in smiles. And tonight we're millionaires because we had the youth sled hockey team in one of the suites donated by Centennial Authority getting to go downstairs. Bridget Condon had a great coverage of those three downstairs at a meet and greet. And to see the smiles and the joy, and we talk about hockey of what it does and how it changes people and how it changes these youngsters who get to play a sport even though they can't skate like hockey players, but they sit in a sled, and to them, they are hockey players through and through, and they love the speed, they love the action, they love the camaraderie of teammates. Yep. And to see that last night, those are so many different parts of the game that I love to see.
Yeah, I want to thank Bridget as well because she's giving us access to her video for that. I hope to use it in the broadcast in Florida. And the little girl who met Rod Brindamore and James Reimer, her name is Rosie. And that's a name that's endearing to a lot of Canes fans we know for one-time great Chad LaRose fan favorite, how he played. But she said she loves playing hockey because she gets to go fast. Yeah. On her. I mean, that stuff's amazing.
She is fast. With only one able-bodied arm, they made a prosthetic to help her on her other arm that helps her push and propel herself. She is one of the quickest skaters I've seen in a sled in a long time because I've tried it, and I'm pretty sure she could skate circles around me.
Oh, I tried it last year, and I got hit in the head with a puck.
So hopefully we can do some coverage on them this year, get a little bit more spotlight on them. But a tremendous program that the Sled Hurricanes have been doing, continue to grow, not only on the youth side, but on the adult side. An awesome Tom. Rosie asked Jordan Martinuk if he wanted to sign it. He was thought, no, I'm just going to stick with the poster. But as she told James Reimer, I just got this today. You see Superman and Supergirl on
and
there,
Supergirl.
And she goes, I'm Supergirl. And that's how she views it, and when she steps on the ice, she flies as fast as Supergirl out there.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. What it's all about.
Yeah. I think that's a good place to end this edition of Gaines Cast.
Yep.
Too bad we lost Bill Berniston about 10 minutes ago, because I think he would have enjoyed that story, but he's
that's
a strength and conditioning coach.
As I told him, he needs to broaden his horizons and learn to embrace everything we talk about, not just
hockey. You guys want to do some push-ups just in
yeah.
just for Bill?
Sure. I'll do two, maybe three. There you go. Broadening my horizons for you, Bill, making that happen. Shane Willis with us the entirety of this broadcast.
Thank you.
We appreciate that.
We do appreciate Shane.
Enjoyed being here,
in.
Guys. It was amazing.
Also, I know we the contest last week for the opening night tickets was tell us your favorite part about the podcast. Really loved reading through all those tweets. A lot of love for the new Marty Minute.
Yep.
A lot of love for the player interviews and the guests. And hopefully you enjoyed Shane for this.
For a full hour he stayed with
us. Really just really enjoy all the feedback that you guys provide. Love that you guys love the podcast. We have a blast putting it together every week. And hopefully you enjoyed this episode.
Yeah.
So, we'll give away some tickets sometime in the future again. So keep listening.
So for TV pregame show Shane Willis and the Web's Michael Smith
and TV's Mike Maniscalco,
we will talk to you next Monday with the return of the Marty Minute.
Moi moi.
Thank you.